Tango Tango Papa 1852, July 26, 2014.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Troy, Illinois. So Troy, Illinois is it's kind of like suburban St. Louis, Missouri, but it's on the Illinois side. It's kind of out on the edge of the city. So haven't been putting out too many podcasts lately. I know it's probably been at least a week or more since the last one. I have been keeping up with the videos. I know that's, as I've said before, that's kind of ironic that the videos are actually easier to keep up with now than the audio is. So I was going to record this. I'm actually recording this in a little bit of a more of an unusual way. I'm recording this on my iPad using a program called Boss Jock. I've recorded it this way before. It's been a while since I've done it. I should do it more often just to kind of keep up with this. But in any case, I was going to record it with the white plastic MacBook, but I'm having a problem getting my power adapter to power it up. The battery should be charged. I know the battery's charged from the last time I used it the other day, but something has. I noticed that here lately that when I, you know, that magnetic power adapter, when I stick it on there, it may or may not light up. So I think something has probably gone wrong with the power adapter itself. That's kind of my guess. So I don't know. Those things can wear out, and of course Apple tends to use things that are, you know, I guess they're trying to make things lighter or whatever, and it does, you know, that can end up kind of affecting the overall longevity of, you know, let's say that in this case it's a power adapter. So once I make it home, then I've got other Apple power adapters for, you know, with the magnetic connector. So I'll be able to test that pretty quickly. But I think it's the power adapter itself, and so I tried kind of wiggling it around and so on and so forth, and it's just to no avail. It's not working properly, so something's gone wrong with it. So but I can always record this on the iPad and not really worry about and I could, if worst came to worst, I could also record it on my phone. I've got a number of different ways of doing it without actually using a computer. So anyway, so I'm in Troy, Illinois right now. I picked a load up earlier that I picked it up at, can't remember the name of the town. I want to say Beloit, but it's not Beloit. Butler, Wisconsin. Sort of think suburban Milwaukee. Picked that up earlier today, and then that load delivers to Pryor, Oklahoma, Monday evening, and then once I'm unloaded at Pryor, should be able to go home after that. It's not, you know, Pryor is maybe an hour and a half or so, give or take a little bit, from home, so should be able to go home, and then time to take a few days off again. So looking forward to that. So anyway, I think the last time I want to read more from this book by Roy Masters, A Gravity Driven Universe. And I think the last time I was at I did chapter 6, so we're ready for chapter 7. So we're going to be doing that. The other thing, you know, if you read the news and what have you, it's just getting progressively worse, and the country, the United States, is in the process of being systematically destroyed. And, you know, for years I could see this coming. And, it was almost like I was a voice crying in the wilderness, and there were people who were saying, oh, it can never come to that, and sort of make fun of the gloom and doom and what have you, thinking that that was the whole point of it. And, now it's coming to pass. I could see it happening, you know, for years I could see it happening, and it's now coming to pass. If you have kids, your kids basically have, you know, their future is pretty iffy at this point. People mindlessly feed their kids, and they've been doing this for years, feed their kids to the public school system, making excuses. They'll say, oh, the kids need to be socially. We know that private school or homeschooling, the kids get better grades, but they need to be socialized. So in other words, you want to brainwash so they can be part of the flock. Is that what you want? That's what you're really saying. Have this faux or fake faux f as in faux leather. Well, you know, this is a faux morality that abortion is good and everything's a shade of gray and it's okay to shack up and have all the sex you want. Here's the condoms. There's a Planned Parenthood somewhere that, I don't remember where it was at, I'd have to look, but there's a Planned Parenthood somewhere that was teaching little kids about, bondage, sexual bondage, domination, so on and so forth. You know, teaching little kids about that. You know, and that's what goes on in these, you know, in all of these places, and that's where it heads, and it's a bottomless pit. There's no such thing as a little bit of evil, you know, kind of living with evil or making your peace with evil. There's no such thing as that. Once you sort of step across the threshold. Once you sort of rationalize, you know, if you, you know, rationalize your morality away, once you rationalize it so that, you know, something that is clearly wrong becomes, you know, you have to think of that as right, then your whole moral footing slips and everything. You end up seeing the world backwards. So, for example, let's say that, you know, you've had an abortion, or you know someone that's had an abortion, and so on and so forth, and so you want to somehow justify it in your mind that abortion is really a good thing, and, so once you've done that, then everything else, because of the way you have to structure that in your mind, then there is no such thing as right and wrong. Then you're living in an alternate universe. You're living in an alternate sort of a faux reality. And then you have to try to force everyone around you to sort of support your faux reality. That abortion is really good, for example. Or that shacking up is really good. It's really a good thing. It's just like being married and so on and so forth. All the rationalizations. You come up with, you throw morality out the window, and then you have to start saying, well, what's the gold standard? There are no gold standards. And, you know, how do we come up with some sort of a moral standard? Well, you've thrown it out the window. You know, and so that's, and you can do that with any one of the major sins. You know, and you know when you're sinning, you know that it's wrong to steal, you know that it's wrong to lie, you know that it's wrong to covet, and so on and so forth. And yet, you know, once you've stepped across that line and, once you stepped across the line and you won't admit that you're wrong, then you have a guilty conscience, and then you have to run from the guilty conscience and you look for other people that'll help you, sort of support your faux reality. Right is wrong, wrong is right. We'll support each other's faux reality, but then that's not enough, because reality always has a tendency to catch up. And so then you have to, you know, it must be these other people that disagree, that say that it's wrong to kill your baby. We have to silence those people. We have to force everyone to think that it's okay to kill your baby, it's okay to shack up, so on and so forth. We have to it's okay to steal from other people. We have to force everybody to think that way so that we'll feel right. That'll make us feel right. But of course, it doesn't work. It never works. And so there's always some greater degree that you're driven to in order to try to maintain that faux morality, faux reality, you know, to sort of living in a dream, false dream world. Because reality always has a tendency to catch up. You know, so at this point, the country is gone. It's lost. It's gone. And of course, then people are still focusing on the wrong things. They're focusing on their politics, somehow thinking that, we just have to get the right people, elect the right people, and it's all going to be fixed. And of course, it won't be fixed. It can't be fixed. You're putting your efforts into the wrong place. And usually the people that are, you know, they think they're being politically active and they're making the effort, usually they're already compromised. Usually they've been compromised in some way, you know, to one extent or another. We've all sort of been compromised. You know, how many of us have spoken up when we've had relatives that shack up? For example, probably very few of us. And that's just one place. And so all it takes, you know, is for one thing like that to get a foothold. And then slowly but surely, wrong becomes right and right becomes wrong, and people are removed further and further from reality. And, you end up set up for sort of a French Revolution or a Hitler Germany to happen. And it will happen, make no mistake about it. So, anyway, so let me go ahead and start reading here. Let's see. Okay. So we're going to start with chapter 7. And the title of it is, and this is a book 2. Title is Complex Matter from Simple Energy. And this is a quote from St. John 1:1, and it's a Phillips translation. At the beginning, God expressed himself. That personal expression, that word, was with God and was God, and he existed with God from the beginning. All creation took place through him, and none took place without him. In him appeared life, and this life was the light of mankind. The light still shines in the darkness, and the darkness has never put it out. And that's St. John 1:1 of the Phillips translation. It is unlikely that any electron microscope will ever see the particle I call the ergatron, the smallest in the universe. The ergatron is so infinitely tiny that it could conceivably pass through all subatomic spaces, of which matter is mostly comprised, shining through the entire Earth like a ray of light through a pane of glass. One can only assume that the ergatron exists because it is so tiny as to be virtually undetectable. In fact, it is so tiny it practically doesn't exist at all. You might say it is on the borderline of existence. If that is true, and if we build on that cause and effect thesis, we should eventually arrive, going from logical assumption to logical assumption, at an identifiable aspect of the ergatron's nature. When these tiny particles are pushed through linear space, they radiate what could be called drag waves or bow waves. I've tried to show how ergatrons, which are primal matter, actually dropped out of the pre-time force. As this primal matter came into existence, space-time also appeared in the very same instant. In other words, space-time came forth as an immediate expression and extension of primal matter. All came forth in such quick succession that one could hardly separate the parts of the process. In this sense, it is not hard to grasp the biblical description of creation when God said, "Let there be," and there was. For there is no space without time, no time without matter, no matter without primal pre-time force, and no pre-time force without God. The creation of complex matter. Let's follow the logic of creation and examine how, in a twinkling of an eye, more complex structures must have been built from these tiny ergatron building blocks. Imagine the path of just two ergatrons made up of what I like to I liken to frozen pre-time energy, spinning and winding omnidirectionally, having clotted out of pre-time force. Think of the ergatrons as little chunks of ice in a river. Next, visualize these two particles experience as a result of their birth into matter as they drag into what now, because of their mass, has become a time current for them. Visualize that time river pushing these ergatrons along in a strong current moving at billions of times the speed of light, and this violent pre-time current moving these little chunks of its own frozen self along, creating a bow wave effect at the stern where the ergatrons drag in the river current flowing by and pushing them along. When I say stern wave, I am just using a two-dimensional model for simplicity's sake. Notice also how those little solidified particles cannot keep up with the incredible force of the time river. The effect is that of a reverse bow wave from the stern, a drag wave which is created as the river pushes past the particles. The reason I use ice as an example is that ice is an allotrope of water. even as a diamond is an allotrope of carbon, meaning it is exactly the same chemistry, but in a different form. I use ice to illustrate that matter is simply pressurized, crystallized pre-time force flowing now in what has become to it a river of time. Although the analogy is imperfect, imagine again, if you will, that time river is pushing these little chunks of its solidified self along, creating the effect of a stern wave. By this theory, I claim that light does not move under its own power, but it is being pushed by pre-time force. In fact, all matter in the universe moves with a basic motion because of the presence of this mysterious background force. Humans, made of heavier mass, moving with the Earth, move much more slowly than light, which passes us by as though we were standing still. In other words, mass moves slower than light, and light moves slower than pre-time force, but everything is in relative motion to the absolute rest. Since matter itself is made up of many subatomic particles, we must consider how these larger particles may have developed from the tiny ergotron. How could such little particles of energy come together to create newer and more complex forms? The essential ingredient in this continued birthing process is still the tremendous pressure, perhaps super pulsations of pre-time force. I cannot comprehend creation as happening without the employment of some unusual force, since much more pressure than ordinary light velocity is needed to bring these particles together. We know that light meeting light does not create matter. Remember, primitive particles are still small enough to be affected by the great pressure of pre-time force. As matter evolves into grosser forms, it becomes less subject to this primary pressure force, and thus requires a different building process to continue its evolution. Let us first consider the earliest forms of matter creation, which require superacceleration. Superprimal velocity. At the creation event, subatomic particles were, and still are, pushed along by pre-time force much faster than light velocity, therefore creating A, much bigger drag waves than usual, and B, primitive gravity. Hold these two thoughts in mind as I proceed with my explanation. For the sake of discussion, let us pretend for a moment that just two ergotron particles are now boats or vessels passing each other in the ocean. Observe the effect of their ripples or bow waves and how the two ships affect one another in their passing. Relate this to how these two ergotrons might interact with each other in coming together to form a larger particle with entirely new properties of matter. Now let's take a closer look at what ergotrons really are and how they interact. Of course, they are not solid like a boat. As primal force matter, they are more like spinning whirlpools, which by the nature of their spinning possess what we might call weight, resistance to motion. Clearly, their spinning makes them heavier than the relatively linear force that created them. Following this logic, because the whirlpool-like ergotrons have weight, they drag in the pre-time force, and just like any object floating in a river, they cause drag waves. Thus, we have a whirlpool wave, and because of this drag, we have a wave around the whirlpool. In this context, the first wave is primitive mass, and the second wave is caused by the motion of the mass. The whirlpool waves that have become mass produce waves that are not mass. In other words, one kind of wave creates another kind of wave. The first is the basis of what we call a solid, and the second is a root of energy field that becomes gravitational, magnetic, and electric in that order. Two whirlpool-like ergotrons approach each other at greater than light speed from any direction, disturb the space-time medium in such a way as to draw the origatrons around or into each other. I'm not specifying whether these two elementary forms actually blend together or simply circumorbit each other perpetually. The key is that they come together and form something greater than themselves. Of course, it is mere speculation as to which occurs. Perhaps at different stages of matter, development both occur. First one and then the other, first forming larger whirlpools, and then for some dynamic reason, whirlpools orbiting whirlpools, and so on. There is no logic to that, there is a logic to this that is fun to consider. There must be a minimum whirlpool able to maintain itself, forming the smallest particle of energy, the origatron. Likewise, there must be a maximum whirlpool particle that cannot maintain itself in any larger state, but can hold other weights in orbit. The next stage of formation depends on orbital relationships of these whirlpool creations. Two forms of gravity. In considering the smallest of a particle, we have to include the concept of gravity, otherwise what holds things together? At this juncture, let me say there are two forms of gravity, one caused by a steady state acceleration, which Einstein said is indistinguishable from gravity. I believe that this form of gravity mostly concerns the primitive stages of the creation of matter, caused by the sheer steady state pressure of massive acceleration of the primal winds. In other words, let's see, where was I at? Oh, there we go. The other form of gravity, which we will discuss later, concerns the presence of huge masses in space, which by their nature warp space and time. This form of gravity does not depend on acceleration, but only on its massive presence in space-time. Of course, all mass by its nature possesses gravity. Subatomic particles in their creation formation themselves have gravity by virtue of their inward spin, maintained by the pressure applied to them by the pre-time force, which is time to them. Larger mass has a different gravity because, as Einstein stated, the mass distorts the space-time medium around it. This, I say, causes a pressure or a push on all surfaces of larger mass that is called gravity. The beauty of all of this is that both forms, the particle and the gross mass, have gravity due to their relationship with the unified pre-time space-time field. One by virtue of its motion through space-time, and the other due to its massive presence in space-time. Einstein was right when he said that steady-state acceleration is indistinguishable from gravity. However, more than that, steady-state acceleration and gravity are not merely indistinguishable. They are the same, simply manifestations of the same origin. While Einstein said that the steady state of acceleration was indistinguishable from gravity, it is not sustainable gravity as it applies to already created mass. Where steady state acceleration gravity does not apply is in the creation of essential mass, the smallest particle I have called the origatron. In his theories about steady state acceleration and the equivalence principle, Einstein was actually describing the force required for the creation of matter. This force takes on another form in post-creation reality, which Einstein knew was a phenomena equivalent to steady-state acceleration, real gravity as we know it. Once primal matter, possibly dark matter, is formed, steady-state acceleration energy ceases to be a factor. Remember that the Rigatron is nothing more than steady-state accelerated energy that has gravitationally compressed itself into mass. While steady-state acceleration is a form of gravity, it is not the gravity of existing creations. Steady-state acceleration simply brings creation to the point of existence. I know that some of these chapters are more difficult to read than others, but both scientifically and spiritually. If you found this chapter particularly hard to absorb, I hope you will give it a second reading. Doing so may help a great deal. Whoops, let's see here. Okay, so that was that. We're ready for chapter 8. I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off. I turned my air conditioner off here because it was kind of excuse me, it was kind of noisy with this setup that I've got. So I turned it off, and it's starting to get a bit stuffy in here. So I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off. So in any case, hope everyone is having a great weekend, and I will catch you later. Let's see here. Where's it at? There it is. All right, here we go.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.